Hello, you are listening to the Burst Bot Scottish Football Podcast. Yes, it's me, Hamish Carton, back in the hot seat after probably about a year and a half out of the action. We've got so much to chat about that this is probably going to be an extended podcast today because there's just so much happened over the weekend and more. We've got uncomfortable returns for the likes of Lennon, Miller and McKinnon, of course. We've got managerial returns, I think five in total, but we can count them later on as we go through the show. And, of course, all the weekend's action from the Premiership and beyond. Joining me, just two guys, but what they lack in numbers, they more than make up for in intellect. We've got Callum Scott. How are you?
Hi, good, Hamish. Thanks very much for having me on, and it's good to see you return to the hot seat.
Yeah, I'd like to give you a good story of why I've decided now is the right time to come back and all that crap, but I think it's basically that we've not really got anyone else at the moment. Is that the case, Gamba?
Sure, yeah, we'll go with that, we'll go with that. It's weird, I'm getting kind of nostalgia here, being, you know, it's kind of like all coming back to me, being locked in a basement with you and there. It's kind of, it's weird.
Locked in a basement?
Ah, yeah, for the original podcast.
It's like we're going back to like 2014. I'm kind of half expecting, I don't know, like Ali McCoy's to come out of the cupboard with Rangers suit on or something like that. I don't know.
Ramstein playing out his phone.
Yeah. Right, we won't dwell too much. We'll leave the formalities till probably later on in the show when we'll have a debate about a number of things, I'm sure. To make it easy, we'll start with the match. We'll obviously start with the Premiership. We'll start with a match that is probably, or I would hope, certainly freshest on everyone's mind. It was a match that took place on Sunday between Hamilton and Rangers. I kind of had to squint at the scoreline here because it actually says Hamilton 1, Rangers 4. That wasn't the case, was it?
They apparently scored like 3 goals. Really, yeah. really late on. It's, Craig Gamble described it as the most unconvincing pumping.
He's spot on. I mean, it was, I think it was 1-0 with 10 minutes to go. Ryan Kent put Rangers ahead in the first half. Stephen Boyd, equaliser for Hamilton Accies. What a goal that is. That is like contender for goal of the season. He's apparently, I never saw the goal, but apparently scored an even better one against Motherwell to win the Lanarkshire Derby earlier on in the season. He's a former Celtic youngster, same team as Kieran Tierney, I think, growing up, Ian Crocker said today. So he scored the equaliser. Hamilton were thinking, God, we might get a result out of this. Rangers are thinking, God, when are we going to win on the road? And then stepped up James Tavernier. Two penalties, his eighth or his ninth of the season. And, of course, a late Alfredo Morelos strike as well. What were your thoughts on this one, Carl?
Again, just really what you guys said. I mean, Rangers were certainly the better team the kind of first half. And then Accies came more and more into the game and were more than deserving of their equaliser. Yeah. But what an absolutely manic last 5-6 minutes. I mean, that is, I mean, I feel sorry for Canning and his jumper, of course, but obviously, like, I mean, for them to go toe-to-toe with Rangers and come out with really much as a thumping in the end, but it's never that in a million years. I think Accies are a bit hard done to. I think that was an absolute stonewall penalty that they should have gotten in the first half, especially when you see the two Rangers penalties. I mean, out of the three, it's the Accies one the Rangers' first penalties, it's still a handball, so there's no doubt about that, but it was maybe a tough one to call at the time. But Rangers' second penalty for me is never in a million years, and Hamilton can feel themselves hard done to by, but I mean, credit to Rangers to obviously get their first away win in the league this season, and that'll definitely be a monkey off their back for them to kind of kick on. We had no doubt that it's not as if Rangers were ever going to go through the full league season without winning an away game, but it is obviously a big relief for them to go there and do that and kick on and keep a bit of pressure on the teams above them.
Yeah, I was reading in the stats been going around a bit that it was Rangers' first away win since February.
Aye.
That can't be right, can't February?
What? Seriously?
Calendar year, pretty much.
Aye, pretty much. That was the thing. They were talking about that a lot on, I was listening to the game on BBC Scotland, and they were going on and on and on about this, and I was going like, it's one of those ones where you hear the stats so many times, it's like, right, it's over today, isn't it? Like, it's like they kind of just have to win now, because, you know, it is, I mean, half a year Not great. Obviously, there's the kind of summer break in the middle of it, but like,
but it's what's that like? 6 weeks now.
Yes, it's one of those ones where it's like, okay, never through August, never through September, we're almost at the end of October. Like this has to come.
Is that seriously right? They haven't won.
I'll look it up for you, but it's definitely. I don't know who the team was against, but
that is unbelievable.
I'm sure it's February.
That is actually unbelievable. So, see, to be fair then, if that's the kind of the burden they were carrying, then even better for Gerrard again, and just kind of shows the job he's done. But I really can't believe that. That's mental.
Considering how long it's been, they really could have crumbled when that Hamilton goal went in.
Oh, like, definitely.
Obviously, Hamilton completely crumbled when the goal went in. But, you know, it's that thing where it's just like, okay, that goal goes in and you're kind of thinking, right, here we go again. It's going to be an absolute farce again. They're going to drop points.
But, right, I've looked it up. I believe, unless I'm mistaken, that it was St Johnstone away on the 27th of February. That was a game, I think, if I'm right in saying so, although I could 4-1? Be wrong, I think it was maybe on a Friday night. And I think they won 4-1. Since then, if I look back, they had a 2-2 draw at Motherwell. I think that was the one when Motherwell were 2-0 up. They lost, of course, 5-0 at Celtic Park. They also failed to win at Aberdeen and Hibs after the split. And then, of course, this season they've had, what, Aberdeen, Celtic, Livingston and Motherwell. So right, it's maybe not quite as many. I think it's maybe about, what's that, 7 or 8 matches, which is still probably pretty crazy. But, yeah, February was the last time they'd won away from home before today. So it's remarkable. And as you say, for me personally, I know they've won the game 4-1 today, but I really... I didn't think they were much better today than they were in the last away game against Livingston. I thought it was kind of similar performances. I think the difference was today they were up against a team that, for me, Hamilton really weren't up to much. I think that the final ball was really poor, and I think the goals they lost, I mean, I know two of them were penalties, but the first one certainly was a silly penalty to give away with a handball. I think the first goal is just it came out of nothing. It's a good finish by Kent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the goalkeeper is doing rushing out, makes his decision for him. I've not actually seen the last goal, but it's not great either.
Yeah, again, it's another kind of the keeper comes out too far. But to be fair, I think it's a really, really good finish for Morelos.
Right.
But I still think it's one of those you'd still expect your striker to score, but it's just a pretty emphatic finish with his left foot, to be fair to him. But nah, the goals that Aki's conceded today, they really did shoot ourselves in the foot. But in regards to the penalties, I mean, kids, if you're watching, that's how you take a penalty. Tavernier, he's phenomenal. Just set pieces in general, but I mean, he certainly doesn't miss for 12 yards. Yeah. And you always know that he's got a, it's just, they're always so perfect that just the way he strikes the ball, he's. It's just a real quality that he's got, and particularly his first penalty was you don't see many better penalties than that.
Yeah, it's kind of remarkable to think that he was one of the guys who missed in the Scottish Cup semi-final shootout against Celtic, isn't it?
I know.
You see how well he takes them nowadays. I think it was him and Nicky Clark that day that missed. But Rangers were, I suppose, pretty dominant in the end, but as I said before, it is a bit of a flattering scoreline. Do you see them kicking on from here, Gamba, on the road? Was it just a case of getting that monkey off the back? Or, as I maybe possibly think, do you think that their struggles are a bit more than simply just peeping over the cracks like they did today?
It's a strange one.
I've never seen a team so good at home, and they've been brilliant at home. You see the team they've beaten so far. I think every single match, pretty much, they've won at home, other than Osijek. But away from home, it's just a domestic thing as well, because away from home in Europe, they're drawing with Villarreal and getting results in Russia with 9 men and all that kind of stuff. So it's totally bizarre.
I don't know. Who is their next away game? Do we know?
I don't know. Look up for you. Well, they've obviously got Aberdeen at Hampden, but if you're counting that,
so
I'll look up for you now.
November, and they'll be.
They're away to
St Mirren.
Oh no, yeah, St Mirren. Sorry, so they've got St Mirren on the road. Then they've got They've got obviously Sparta at Moscow at home. But then away to Aberdeen, at Hampden against Aberdeen. They've got Killy at home, St Mirren away, Moscow away, and then a run of 3 home matches: Motherwell, Livingston and Villarreal. So a lot of home matches coming up for them. And then, of course, at the start of December, they have what looks like a really tough match away at Tynecastle. So St Mirren away, they'll probably fancy that one.
Yeah, I think so. Considering how St Mirren have been recently, I think they'll probably fancy their chances in that one. But I know there's a lot of games in between now and then, big games as well. Semi-final at Hampden, although, I mean,
that's pretty much a home game of the support.
I was going to say when we may come on to this later on, but yeah, it's looking like it'll probably be the equivalent of a home game for them, so they might be okay in that regard. It's a strange one because Hamilton haven't been great recently. However, they did give Rangers a game, but then you look at the score, it's just such a weird culmination of factors where you don't really know how much to take away from it. I suppose the thing to take away from it is there is that the mentality of Rangers is probably different considering they didn't collapse after the equaliser goes in. So looking forward, yeah, they probably will do better away from home in the future, but still wasn't great.
I know, I mean, but just simply, I mean, last season, if Rangers conceded that goal, if Rangers conceded that goal with 10 minutes to go, I mean, they're really, I mean, a point's the most they've got to get for that game, you know. So you look at that and they still go and put three past Accies after that. It's a totally different animal, Rangers, this season, and obviously it just welcomes to the how competitive the league is in general. And it's just, for me, obviously it'll be my own club doing it as well, but I mean the season so far has just been brilliant and absolutely loving every single moment of it.
Just touching on Rangers in terms of individual performances, when a lot made of the defensive situation. I think it's fair to say Goldson is the number one centre half. He started the season alongside Nikola Katic for most of the European games and in the first few league matches, and Joe Worrell came in. Of course, I think deadline day or a couple of days before that, and since then he's pretty much been the defensive partner to Goldson. Today it was Katic, and you can kind of see why Gerrard has decided to put Worrell in the last few matches. Katic just looked a bag of nerves today. His distribution was really poor. He didn't defend well at all, and I mean, I know it's probably quite difficult to come back into the team after you've been out of things for so long and try and look like you're just knitting back into the team seamlessly, but it was far from convincing, the opposite from Katic today, and I think that's probably left Gerrard in no doubt who his best centre-half pairing, and the fact he actually brought Worrell on with 10 minutes to go I think said quite a lot as well. I think he was probably just resting Worrell ahead of the big matches we've got coming up over the next week or so, but it was just a bit of food for thought, I'm sure, for Katic playing so poorly. I'm trying to think of anyone else. It's a strange one again, Gamber, because it was 5 goals in the match, but it's a pretty forgettable affair. I can't really think of any other players that really caught the imagination. I thought of Jarier, who just seems to improve every time I see him. I thought when I first saw him, this guy's just not really interested. He's slow, he's laboured, he doesn't have any drive, he's not getting any real quality. I thought he was another, what was that fella's name? Odoa, the boy they got him for Spurs a few years ago. I thought he was another one of him, but he's 2 or 3 times the player of that. I think he's Rangers' best player at the moment, the way he's playing. For me, he was the one that stood out today, but I'm really struggling to think of another Rangers player today that I would say he was really good.
I mean, not that he was an outstanding player or anything like that, but it was mental when you saw John Rossiter's name on the team sheet.
No. He just needs to get that shirt untucked. He just looks like an idiot with that.
It looks like a kind of default player when you make a guy in FIFA. just straight away, it's just the shirt tucked in, whatever, boots, and just looks so middle of the road, it's unbelievable. I mean, I don't think MD tucks their shirts in these days, so. Obviously, it's a guy that. It's just a strange one with Rossiter. I mean, you never know how long this guy's got to stay fit for. You welcome back and see, because obviously there's a player there, but you've got to question it. I mean, if Liverpool couldn't get him fit with the resources they've got, I mean, you think, I mean, how is it going to work out at Rangers? I mean, he's been here for, what, is it 3 years? Well, 2 years now, three seasons.
Was he not there from two and a bit years, because Warburton brought him?
It was the 2016 season,
it was Warburton that signed him, so it's just a strange one, and I mean, you can probably counting one hand the amount of games he's played in the Premiership, but again, to see him back, and obviously as a player, and if he can get him fit, then it'll be quite interesting to see how his career pans out. But just the kind of cynicism in me sees that if Liverpool couldn't get this boy fit, I don't know how Rangers can. But again, happy to be proved wrong, because as I've said, there's obviously clear talent in the lad.
Yeah, I think he's still recovering from that Scott Allen challenge at the end of last season, which I somehow found myself browsing in that on YouTube the other day, and that is just one of the most mental challenges I've ever seen. Correct me if I'm wrong, but did he not get away with like a booking or something for that, or was it just a booking he got? God, that was amazing. What a challenge. Incredible stuff. So that was Hamilton 1, Rangers 4. You'll notice a bit of a divide in most of the matches. Hamilton bad, Rangers good in terms of where they are in the league at the moment. Livingston, Dundee are certainly showing that at the moment. Livingston, of course, being the good ones. This match, again, a bit bizarre. It finished 4-0 somehow. Based on the chances, certainly from the highlights, it didn't seem like a 4-0 game. The most interesting thing I took for this, Callum, was that A, all four goals came for set pieces, which I don't know if I've ever seen that. Mm-hmm. And also all three of Livy's defenders, being Gallagher, Halkett and Lithgow, all got in the score sheet, which again, I don't know if I've ever seen all of a team's defenders scoring.
Yeah, no, there's got to be a first somewhere. But the thing that stuck out for me, obviously, I mean, we're only getting to watch highlights. I mean, obviously I wasn't at the game, I don't think either of you guys were either. But
no,
for me, that is, I think that's the worst performance I've seen for Dundee this season, which some might laugh at. Like, I think that is worse than what McCann had. Like, definitely. I mean, every single, it was McCann, so many times they done well, they carved out chances, and just ridiculous individual errors cost them, and like really kind of proper blunders. But see, that is just, Livingston just wanted that more. See, he conceded four goals for a set piece. That's no effort. It was when I seen the first one for, was it Gallagher? I mean, it was just so simple. It was unbelievable.
It's a bizarre goal, isn't it? Because it's the definition of simple. It's literally just, and it goes in straight. I think the keeper's at fault as well, because it goes in really, really strangely.
It's just what I took for that game is just that Gary Holt said it was, what a scoreline for them, but it wasn't as if Livingston were creating chances left, right and centre. But that is just Livingston far more desire to get on at the end of crosses than Dundee were, which is a really, really, really worrying sign, especially when it's the first game under a new manager. I mean, we'll talk about the new manager bounce, whether it's a thing or no, but you definitely see something. Like, you see players fighting for balls that maybe 2 weeks ago they wouldn't have. Dundee were fighting for less for me in Saturday than they have been doing, because that was just, it was embarrassing, absolutely embarrassing defending.
The can I talk about like fundamentals in football? See the second goal, it's Halkett, isn't it? And he's like in the middle of the box, the ball just lands him. It's a very wee kind of like turn and header he does to kind of steer it towards the corner. But you're looking at it and you're going like, he could take that down in his chest, take a touch, and probably finish that.
Aye, before MD's near him, aye.
Yeah. For me, the most alarming thing you're saying, Callum, was the lack of like fight for Dundee. I mean, all the new managers are fair enough, but it's the fact you're going to Livingston, the team that, probably along with Hearts so far this season, have shown the most fight, and you know you're going to be in a match with them. And fair enough, Dundee, I'd maybe argue Dundee don't have the quality Livingston do at the moment in terms of just going forward and the quality of players, but
it's crazy to win it though, even that
same amount of fight. No, you're right, it's absolutely remarkable. It's our first unhappy return of the week, and it is of course Kenny Miller going back to the very start of the season. He must just be wondering what's going on here.
Before I knew Dundee were going to be in a relegation dogfight, but I'm now seriously worried for them. If that is the first game under McIntyre and that is what they're producing, then I don't know. Because I genuinely thought they would get a point or something, just go to Livingston.
Yeah, I wondered that.
I just thought it would be just a right scrappy game, which obviously it was, but I mean, just that is to get beat 4-0 for just four crosses is just, it's criminal. It's totally criminal. And Martin Tyrrell will be counting down the days till January until he can get his own players in. Because you're looking now, and I know we'll come on to St Mirren, but St Mirren, they've went and get these guys who really remind me of Lee Clark signings when Lee Clark first came in at Kilmarnock, when they signed Faubert, Alex Henshaw and Miles Addison, who were all boys with kind of decent pedigree, but they're never going to be fit. You know what I mean? And that's what St Mirren have done with signing Adam Hamill, who's got an atrocious injury record. Simeon Jackson. Who will come good, I think, but he's got to take a while to get up to speed. So Dundee don't want to find ourselves in that position either. No point in getting these guys in who are going to take 4 or 5 weeks up to speed. So McIntyre's got to be counting down the days to January to even get his own players in, because I mean, you just go through that Dundee team and I don't know, man. There's so much missing from it, it's unbelievable. But the biggest thing that clearly was missing in Saturday was just purely fight and desire, which is really, really, really worrying.
Yeah, I suppose what Jim McIntyre would say, Gamba, is in his own defence that he only had what 48 hours with the player since being appointed. But then I suppose what a lot of Dundee fans are saying is that, God, why did you leave it till the Wednesday or the Thursday before her match when you had 2 weeks and an international break to bring a new manager in?
On you go, Cal.
Oh, sorry to jump in there, Gamba, but I know we're probably going to address this, but just on that, what the hell were the Dundee board up to?
What the fuck was going on?
I mean, how can you just sit in? I mean, if the time was to sack McCann, it was maybe before he actually got his first win, well, looked like the obvious time to get rid of him. They gave him it, he got his win at Aki's, and then we beat them. And then you just give the guy a week and a half in the job and then get rid of him again. Yeah. I mean, it was always got to be a recipe for disaster. I don't know. Do we think that this is because they try to bring Jeffries in? I don't know.
Well, as anyone who follows me on Twitter will know, I spoke to Jim Jeffries earlier on in the week, actually. He said unequivocally that Neil McCann was for the appointment of Jim Jeffries. The stuff about Jim Jeffries coming in and rocking the boat and Neil McCann not being happy, and that the reason for his departure for Dundee. He said, Jim Jeffries said that Neil McCann wanted to work with him, and it was Jim Jeffries' side that he just couldn't make it work. I can't remember his reasoning, but he couldn't. I do remember. It was because he lives in one of those places away down south. He lives in the, what do they call those areas? Kind of the borders. Nah. I think it's the borders. So he's miles away. So he couldn't effectively get up to Dundee. So that's the reasoning. So he said there was nothing to do with that. But it does beg the question, and there's been a lot of speculation about that. But something must have happened.
As much as obviously Jeffries has never got to come out and say, oh, I can never want it with me. No, but I totally believe in what you're saying, Jeffries said that. Because obviously they worked together at Dundee. Dunfermline. And then I think he was a coach at Hearts as well. But I think it was Jeffries that brought through McCann. I don't think for a minute that McCann would have been opposed to working with Jeffries, but it's just a totally bizarre situation, and I don't know. I'd just be really, really worried if I was a Dundee fan now. And I wasn't even saying this last week when we beat them. I was like, they will come good, but just Saturday and the whole malaise around Dens Park now. I don't know. I generally don't. I think McIntyre, given time, will make them competitive, but he's certainly got his work cut out for him.
Yeah,
well,
he's been given what, top 8 to get.
Aye, that's top never 8. Got to happen. Never.
Is that his aim?
Aye, well, that's what it said. They said relegation, avoiding relegation, isn't it? It said the top 8 and potentially pushing for top 6, and you're thinking, Jesus wept. I mean, just like come in and just beaming being and say, oh, we've got tasks.
Was it not someone on the board that said this?
Aye, it was the managing director or whoever it was.
He's here to get us top 8.
You're just like,
you're just shooting yourself in the foot with that.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with them saying, given time, depends how it goes, we've got these ambitions to do this and that, but the first thing for them is to stay in the division. And if they're saying anything otherwise, they're kidding themselves on, because I mean, ask any Dundee fan now what they want to do. They're not saying, oh, you hopefully can push for the top 8. They're saying, why stay up? They're so lucky though that St Mirren, Motherwell, Accies, because look at the gap already here. Look at the gap between 8th and 12th. That is remarkable at this stage of the season.
A funny wee league coming along here, and we'll come on to it, I think, a wee bit later. You've got your top 7, and I include Aberdeen in that, although they're slightly behind. You've got your bottom 4, if my maths is correct, and then you've got St Johnson, who I think will just be in this wee island all season. Where they're 8th at the moment, and I'm pretty sure they'll finish in 8th, because they're much better than the bottom 4, but they're not quite as good as the top 7. So saying that, Livy may come down to earth a wee bit as the season goes on, but who knows. Just on quickly, on Livy quickly, I mean, all the focus in this match will come on Dundee, of course, but a few stats about Livy that have fished out since Gary Holt came in. They've taken 17 points out of a possible 21. In that time, they've played Hibs and Rangers at home, beaten them both, and got a draw at Hearts as well. They shipped 3 goals to Celtic, of course, in the opening day of the season at Celtic Park. Since then, in the last 8 league matches, including the likes of Hibs, Rangers and Hearts, matches against them, they've conceded just 2 goals, which I think is just remarkable, like, totally remarkable. Dundee, in comparison, have lost 18 goals in their last 8 matches. So there's a difference.
It's unbelievable. Sorry, Gambo, when you go.
I have a very strange theory that is like completely can't be proven. Well, can't be proven right, can only be proven wrong. But I have a theory that if a team comes up through the playoff rather than getting automatically promoted, there's something about the mentality that takes which makes them better.
Oh, Hamilton a few years ago.
Aye. I'm getting.
They just about won the league that season.
Yeah, the Alex Neil season.
Having the one at Parkhead and stuff. Aye.
There's Hamilton fans who genuinely think if Alex Neil hadn't gone in January, they would have made Europe that season.
That's pretty. I know we've not got it to hand, but can MD even guess off the top of their head where they actually were in January? I thought they were still.
I remember they won at Celtic Park to go top of the league, didn't they, in like October time?
Yeah, October, yeah. But it was early October as well, so. I didn't mean to throw him down the bus there, but I was just like, I would have never ever thought that they were ever close to like a European position, like, even when Neil left them, obviously. They were comfortably, because they just about accumulated enough points to stay up by the January, you're kind of, what is it, 34 point mark usually in it, that's just enough to stay up, I think. And I think they'd already maybe accumulated that by January, but or thereabouts, but no, it's interesting.
There was no Hearts, Rangers or Hibs, of course, that season, so they possibly were a wee bit kind of further. I think that was one of the weird years where maybe Inverness were the second or third best team and Aberdeen were up there as well, so it was a strange one. But that was Livingston 4, Dundee 0. Livy, are they the new Hamilton? Well, stay tuned to find out. They are certainly, you just wonder where it all ends for them, because they've got to come down at some point, don't they? They can't keep going at this rate, because they're just unbelievable. Another couple of teams who were unbelievable on Saturday, and by all accounts produced what I've heard is the game of the season so far. It was Celtic 4, Hibs 2. We probably should have started here. I thought we'd get 2 other matches out of the way so that listeners didn't leave us after the big one. So Tom Rogic and Olivier Cham put Celtic ahead. Florian Camberi brought Hibs back in it. That was a cracking goal with his left foot. Edouard scored the first of his 2, sandwiched between or around a Martin Boyle chipped finish. Edouard, of course, scoring late on again to make it 4-2. Was this Celtic starting to get back to hitting their rhythm, Gamba?
Oh yes, certainly in the first half they were excellent, and I know Lennon was saying he takes responsibility for the formation, but I think when Tom Rogic and James Forrest are playing like that, it's hard to
telepathic is the word.
Yes, and Cham as well was working his way into spaces, obviously scored one, probably should have had another one in the amount of space he found himself in. Celtic were absolutely fantastic right up until Scott Brown goes off. And then it became a much more even game. And I said to the boy that sits next to me, I was saying, when Brown went off, I'm like, it's like Hibs have got an extra midfielder. And okay, they did, because they changed the formation a wee bit, but the game became much, much more competitive as soon as Brown went off, I thought, and Hibs really started to overrun Celtic in the midfield. And every single time I've seen Lennon's Hibs play Celtic, I've always thought that they just win the midfield battle, and Brown was able to hold that off. And then I think McGregor did really, really well, but Hibs really, really started to, I mean, not dominate the game, but really do well after that. And see the some of the saves Craig Gordon has to made in the first half. The shot from Malin is a good save, but see the header that he saved.
Oh, it's a great save.
It's sensational. It was a fantastic game of football. And I mean, Celtic could have scored six. Hibs probably could have scored about four. I mean, it was just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to see, isn't it? Because it was, I think we'll come on to the other big match of the weekend later on. But I think it's fair to say the two big matches, and there was so much hype made ahead of them. I think they both delivered big time, especially this game at Celtic Park. I've only seen the highlights, but certainly listened to a few of the pundits that were at the match, like Sir Michael Stewart and Sports Sound, was enthused by the quality of the match. And he's at times, I mean, he's fair enough, I think, but at times he can be a bit of a negative guy. So I think that the fact that he was so positive probably says quite a lot. From what I've read, the reports, albeit from Celtic fans, was that, as you say, Celtic were excellent. It was arguably the performance of the season. But the fact that Hibs, I know they lost 4-2, but Hibs were able to deal with Celtic for long parts of it, which I suppose says a lot about Neil Lennon's side. They're doing pretty well, Hibs, but that's not new, really, is it, Callum? I mean, we know that they can deal with these big matches, and we know that Neil Lennon has them pumped up for it, and we know that despite the fact they've lost McGinn and McGeoch and a few other big players, they've replaced them with real quality, with the likes of Malin and Hindman and players like that. And they just, when you've got a player like Camberry up top, you've always got a chance.
Oh, definitely, and just obviously on Camberry, I mean, what a wonderful finish that was. I
brilliant,
mean, just,
isn't it?
It's excellent, absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, Lennon kind of touched on it in his post-match interview, but when he did change his system, it seemed to make a hell of a difference for them. But one thing I actually kind of was disappointed at, just going by the highlights, was see when Hibs brought it back to 3-2, I mean, it didn't really, obviously a lot of that's down to the kind of quality of Celtic, but it didn't seem to be, they were ever close to getting the equaliser, which I think will be a big frustration to Lennon, because, you know, but it's not very often you'll go to Parkhead and score two goals and kind of leave empty-handed. But, I mean, Hibs, it's such an interesting time coming up with all these massive games in the next few weeks. I think they've still got Edinburgh Derby to go and Rangers Hibs as well. So it should definitely be interesting and see where this will leave the league in a few weeks. As you're saying, Celtic are getting back to their best. Some of the football they were playing in the first half was really, really excellent. Obviously, as you guys said, Rogic and Forrest, the link-up was top class. But I was actually speaking to Gamba before we came on. I mean, one of the things that stuck out for me, again just purely with the highlights, I thought the atmosphere at Parkhead sounded brilliant. I've not seen it like that for maybe since Rodgers' first season, minus, you know, your Old Firm games and European nights, but the atmosphere just sounded electric, you know, for a Saturday at 3 o'clock.
That helps. I think the fact it is a Saturday at 3 o'clock, and I think I might be wrong, I think Gamble was at both the matches, but I think the Aberdeen match a couple of weeks ago, maybe to a lesser extent, was similar in terms of like massive crowds, like I think full houses pretty much. And I think having these games, you can say what you want, and I've seen a lot of stuff over the last week about we should have these matches on television, these like Rangers Hearts a couple of weeks ago and games like that, and I certainly think there's a massive case for that in terms of scrapping this and ripping up this rule book where it's only Celtic and Rangers away from home that are on the telly in our league. I think our football and Scottish football, and the fact we've now got, in my opinion, six teams in the Premiership that are all, you can't afford to miss them. every week. I think there's an argument to have two Scottish games televised every week, and I know a lot of people don't like televised football because it takes away from kind of fans going to, you know, it's all that stuff, but in terms of getting two televised matches a week, I think there's a case for it every week now in Scottish football, and I think the money that would bring in would justify it as well. But I certainly think games like Celtic home to Hibs yesterday, full house at Celtic Park, should be on telly rather than Hamilton Rangers, and likewise a few weeks ago when Rangers Park should have been on ahead of St Johnstone Celtic, or put both of them on, I don't know. But I just think there's so many good matches. I mean, Hearts Aberdeen's another one that could have been in telly on Saturday. You could have had three of the games televised this weekend. But I think on the Celtic thing, having that atmosphere at the game, I think you're right. I think the atmosphere has improved. I think there is a feeling among Celtic supporters that Celtic are gradually getting back to their best. And over the last few weeks, since that defeat at Kilmarnock, albeit there was a setback in Austria, there's been success in the League Cup, getting to the semi-finals, and there's been three league wins that are all tough ones, you know, Aberdeen, Hibs and St Johnstone away from home, thumped them 6-0, so I think Celtic are turning the tide a wee bit.
Just very briefly to come back to the TV point, Hamish, see if you could get a broadcast deal where one of the games would kick off at 5:30 or 6:00, say.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, I don't think you'd lose any of the atmosphere. I think it's the early kickoff
on a Saturday.
Aye, on a Saturday.
I think that's a great idea. It's a time that Scotland have never, as far as I know, really had games. I know there was late games on a Sunday, but I think a late game on a Saturday where the English match, where they have one on.
Aye.
I would honestly be well for that. I know they're looking at the rights. I think they're up for debate next month, if I'm right in saying so, for the Premiership. And I would seriously urge, and I just don't have any faith, to be honest, in the SPFL after what's gone lately. But I would seriously be them. Think outside the box, because Scottish football is at the highest it's been since, I would argue, early 2000s at the moment.
Oh, 100%. I mean, just what I'm saying about how competitive the league is, and look at the caliber of managers we've got up here again, and we're attracting players. It's brilliant. Just when you said that, I mean, Gamba, but imagine that 5:30 kickoff on a Saturday, Celtic or Rangers got a Tynecastle or something. I mean, that is, how good would that be? You know what I mean? It would be brilliant. Everybody'd been in the pub watching it before getting out, and that'd be top class.
Even that game yesterday, like, see if you had that on going up against, if you had that game yesterday going up, say it was on like BT and it's going up against the English football on Sky, or it's on Sky and it's going up against, well, it'd be on Sky going up against the English football on BT. The quality of that game yesterday, there would be none of this, like, oh, it's a pub league, League One standard. You'd have none of that shite, because the caliber of that game yesterday was absolutely fantastic. And
I would argue, and at the minimum, is that the SPFL seriously look at this rule where Celtic and Rangers can only have, I think it's 4 matches at home each a season. The two Old Firm matches at home, and then maybe like a title, another one or another two thrown in. I would rip that up. I would say get more of these, like Rangers at home at Hearts, Celtic home at Aberdeen, and even games like, see Aberdeen, well, maybe not Aberdeen at home at Hearts, but maybe the other way around at a full time cast and things like that. Get those games on the telly, you know, pick and choose our games.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, just when I was listening to you two talking about that, I was actually buzzing, thinking how that would be amazing. But as Hamish said, to just bring everybody back down to earth, I've got absolutely no faith whatsoever in these donkeys to ever. We end up having bloody 11 a.m. kickoffs on a Sunday or something, man. That's ridiculous. It's got to get
6:00 on a Monday.
What, on the subject of kickoff times, what is this new 1:30 kickoff? Like, I'm a fan of it on a Sunday, but when did it happen? And because there's been a few matches, I think Livy Rangers and I think Aberdeen Rangers in the first game of the season. Whenever it's in Sky, it seems to be 1:30, and I'm just wondering when that happened. Just something I noticed. It's hardly an hour, doesn't really make a massive difference, but it's just a wee thing I noticed.
But it's a lot better, because I mean, see just as, like, I mean, obviously the big debate about the televised games is mainly about clubs like ourselves, Kilmarnock. I mean, like, our attendances would plummet, I think, further than they already have at times. I mean, if we're playing a Celtic or whatever, and you know, 12:30 on a Sunday or whatever it is, it's minging, because I mean, I mean, you're out on a Saturday night, and then you're up, and all you've got is your breakfast, and you're straight away at the football, even if you get to that stage. I mean,
answer me this one then. If you get Killy against Celtic at home at Rugby Park, and it's in a 3 o'clock, not televised, but it's in a 3 o'clock, you're getting a much bigger crowd, aren't you? You're getting a much bigger atmosphere. And maybe, as I say, you have another match in place of it. I just don't really get this thing where Celtic and Rangers have to be in the telly away from home every week. I just think, as you say, I mean, Killy Celtic on a Saturday afternoon would be a great game, and you probably get, I don't know, maybe 1,500, 2,000 more Killy fans. Maybe that's pushing it, I don't know.
Oh, I'd say that would be very generous if we're able to get that. But certainly, as little as it would maybe seem to some people, but to get an extra couple of hundred would make a big difference. Particularly, I mean, everybody knows a lot of people's attendances disappear when the Old Firm come to town. A lot of people don't like the games, but I think they would definitely have a couple of hundred extra people if the games weren't televised, because it was only rare occasion that I can think of in recent history was at Celtic Motherwell, and it was a Saturday 3 o'clock at Firth Park, and it was like the first time that had happened. And you brought that up recently, Gam.
There was also a game, I'm gonna say 2012 or 2013, it was 3 o'clock away at Dingwall.
Yeah, it's 3-2 Ross County.
Charlie McGrew scored straight from a corner.
From a corner, yeah, and then Ross County came back to 2-0 down to 1.
Oh, God. That was the season I was kind of just following Celtic around the country. Just like, that was my first year. I'm just like, oh, I'm going to get to go see all these signs.
I believe the reasoning of that was that Rangers were in the lower leagues at that time, and they were just basically broadcasting. Remember they went through that bizarre phase when they were actually broadcasting Rangers home games for some reason at home to like East Stirling and Peterhead and teams like that. They wouldn't even have broadcast that if it was like Motherwell and that going to Ibrox. So I think that was to do with that, but I could be wrong.
You're right.
Right, thank you. One game we're glad wasn't on the telly, broadcast live, is probably the worst game of the weekend in the Premiership. Well, certainly Motherwell 0, St Johnstone 1. Jason Kerr's last minute winner for Saints. We'll come on to them in a second, maybe briefly, because as I say, there's not really much to say about Tommy Wright's side other than they're going to finish 8th in the table, I reckon. Motherwell in a real rut. They've only got one win all season, and that came against Dundee. They've only taken 2 points at home all season against Rangers and Livingston, which on the face of it don't look like bad results, but they're really struggling, and the pressure's just mounting on Steve Robinson. Cal,
I think that they've maybe just been found out a wee bit with it's very all too familiar, I think, Motherwell, and what their kind of game plan is and stuff, and I've absolutely got no opposition to how they play the game or whatever. I'm not one of them. I think every team's got the right to play whatever way they want. But I just think now that people know what they're going to get with Motherwell, and when you go man to man with them and maybe get the better of them, then there's no much else they've got to do. And the thing is, I think there's a lot of players there who are very talented. I mean, Chris Acadena, I think, is a terrific player. But you're not getting the best out of these guys now, in the way they're playing the game. Curtis Main with the chances he was missing.
He scores a few goals, but the amount of chances he misses before he scores are.
I know. It was so strange because when they signed him in January, obviously I didn't know a lot about him, but he was on a terrific run of form, and kind of in the second half of last season for Motherwell, I thought, hey, that's a terrific replacement for Roy Moult, but it's just dried up this season, and it just seems all too one dimensional for Motherwell at the moment. And that defending, and we just slated in D for their defending, but that defending for the goal is just, it's criminal. I could not believe, how can MD have that amount of room in the 6 yard box, you know what I mean, for a corner? It's
in the 92nd minute.
It's just, it's horrendous.
They did the same against, I was at the game against Livingston before the international break, and they did the same against them, and Livingston very nearly in the last minute. It was a bit of a go-mouse scramble.
Yep.
And Livy very nearly scored in that match as well, and the whole atmosphere that day was just a bit bizarre. I mean, it was as if the fans still, they haven't quite turned on mass as in Dundee fans. Like, they're not massively against the team, but I don't think it takes much for them to to turn. I think they want the team to get better, and they're feeling that it's a wee bit like Celtic on a lesser extent, that things are going to click and they're going to get back to where they were last season. But I just don't see the signs. I've never been an expert on formations and things like that, but just I've seen Motherwell twice in 2 weeks, away to Killy, which they lost 3-1 after going ahead, in the Livy game, which they drew after going ahead. And for me, the back three, I don't know why he persists with it. It just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have the protection from the midfield. I think when they play the likes of Bigiri Mana, I don't know if he played yesterday, but they lose so much protection. He just can't track back. I think Alan Campbell's much better at that for them. But just the back three, there's too many mistakes in there, and they're just far too sloppy and far too, as I say, error prone. And I think when you look at that, was probably their main strength last season, as well as getting in behind teams. They've just really done it. They've effectively turned up for maybe two games this season. Mm-hmm. Rangers at home, and when you look at the way they played that day, you wonder how they've only got 5 points all season, Gamba.
It's just kind of going back to some of the things you guys have just kind of touched on there, and I know I've brought this up previously in the podcast. I remember speaking to, not the boys that were on the podcast, but it was Motherwell fans, and they were saying, like, we've made a few good signings. One of the things about the Motherwell team last season is they were kind of one-dimensional. They had one kind of style of play, and they've got players in now. Hopefully there's a different style of play, or we can change it up in a game. You really, really worry about how one-dimensional they are with players that can't play that way.
Do you think he's tried to overcomplicate things? Because I look at the team last season, and what they did well was they kept it simple, didn't they? Do you think he's tried to overcomplicate things too much this season?
Maybe. Like, I just don't get how, like, poor they've been, how they keep playing the same, how they keep kind of, as you said, playing the same way and just getting no results. And I mean, I know they weren't going to concede 6 goals in this game, but you're looking at it and you're going, like, St. John's conceded, you know, well, what, 6 goals in the last game that they played?
Yeah.
No, it's
and you know, they created a few decent chances, but There was nothing. You're going, like, this isn't the St. Johnstone team of like 2 or 3 years ago, where you're going, like, it's going to be a really, really horrific game we've got here, we're really going to have to work for it. And you're just going, like, there was, what, Maine having that chance? I'm really, really worried for them.
I'm with Hamish here with this with the system. I used to be quite a big fan of the kind of back three, two wing backs, if you can get it right. But I just think now, again, it's just this phase in everybody turning into sheep. I know Motherwell were one of the first to implement it in Scotland, but everybody now seems to be trying to play with a back three, and nobody can do it properly. And look at Scotland, they're trying it, and it's just, we've not got the players to do it and implement it properly.
I think Livy are the only team, aren't they, that can do it successfully.
Yep, I totally agree with that, and that's because they've got three proper old school centre halves that do their bit, and they've got dig in the middle of the park
as well as all the fundamentals are there.
It's just the system for me now. See, any time I see teams try to play in Scotland and the Scottish national team, it looks so disorganised. It just looks like bodies dotted around a field half the time. Know that way sometimes you can watch teams, and I'm a bit of a freak this way, and kind of really like some kind of aspects of defensive football, and you see all the players moving in one unit together, go to Parkhead and that, and you see the two banks of four doing their job. But see when teams are playing that, you never see it. You never see who's actually meant to be where and who's doing what job. It just seems that their bodies are just piled into the middle of the park, and you've got that three at the back, and it's sickening to look at.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. I was listening to someone during the week. I think they were referring to Scotland, but I could be wrong in terms of the 3-5-2 formation, and they were saying about the trouble with 3-5-2 when you come up against better teams like Motherwell will most weeks, is that sometimes the two wing backs who are basically, well, I think are the key to 3-5-2 in terms of they need to get forward and back and turn it. And they sometimes, when you're playing against a tough team and you can't get out, like Scotland were against the likes of Portugal and Belgium, they can't get out and you end up with a back five. You just end up not having any out ball at all. And I think the same can be said about Motherwell in a lot of matches. Again, I don't claim to be a formation expert, but I think it's obviously not Aye. Working whatever they're doing Aye. At the moment. I don't know if Stephen Robinson, I like him a lot, I don't know if he's the kind of manager. I get the impression he's quite stubborn. I don't know if he's the kind of guy that will admit he's wrong freely. I don't know. I think it might be his undoing at Motherwell, because certainly, as I say, one win all season, and that was against Dundee. The pressure is mounting on him massively. In terms of St Johnstone, as I say, eighth in the league at the moment. I fully expect them to finish there, because I just think they're, as I've said before, better than the bottom four, but not quite as good as the rest. We'll come on to a match that two of us were at St Mirren Park yesterday, or the Simple Digital Arena, as it's known now. St Mirren 1, Kilmarnock 2. A fourth consecutive win for Kilmarnock. They've come from behind in all four of those matches, incredibly. It's actually five matches in a row that Killie have lost the first goal. St Mirren, they've, on the opposite end of the spectrum, they've four defeats in a row, 1 point from a possible 15 since Oran Kearney came in. First of all, what did you make of this match as a whole, Callum?
It's really how they kind of highlights, I think they've done a good job of that. I thought St Mirren were, I didn't think they were particularly great, but I thought they were well deserving of their goal, and they were definitely the better side in the first half, absolutely no qualms about that. And then I thought second half we really controlled the game, we came straight out and we knew we would, but it's just, it's really, it's so positive, but me being always some kind of bit of pessimism in me, I just, we need to stop giving teams a head start, because it's amazing we're turning it around every other week, but, well, every week, sorry, actually, because it's obviously the four in a row, but we've got to get caught out at some point. I mean, if we keep giving teams these head starts, we've been talking about set pieces. I was really worried for us yesterday. I thought we looked very shaky defensively at set pieces. Son, I've kind of picked up on, I think you've seen it against Celtic as well, even though we get the goal for a set piece. And Boyata could have had a couple in the first half.
Yeah, he could.
We seem more interested in the man opposed to the ball a lot of the time. And I think that was evident for St Mirren's goal. But no, just excellent again, brilliant support up, and just, I'm just really, really enjoying this for a change. I mean, the form since January speaks for itself. We've picked up more points than M Dels in the league, albeit, as I say, we've played one more match, but not going like that. Spoiler, a good start for us. But no, it's just excellent, and I did think we were thoroughly deserving of the win. I think that we've got to touch on the kind of controversial points of the game, and I think that both of the calls were the correct ones.
Yeah, interesting. 6,000 or thereabouts, obviously a big support from Kilmarnock as well. I thought that was a great crowd, even for home support. St Mirren struggling at the moment, I think, to get 6,000 for a match between, with all due respect, two of the kind of medium teams in the league, not two teams with massive supports, to get 6,000, I thought was really good. The two controversial moments, of course, we'll just get your thoughts on them first, Gamba. Starting with the Killie second goal, that was Tish Bowler. Did you think it crossed the line? What's your thoughts on it? Hard to say.
I know, really, you can't, hard to say. Again, it's one of those ones where the goal line tech would help immensely, because there's no great camera angle that you can really go, yep, absolutely.
It's amazing they can't even, and I know it wouldn't have changed the decision if there was a camera angle, because the decision was made and we'd just be then talking about it after, but it's amazing there wasn't like a camera on, a better camera angle to actually properly see it.
I don't know. I mean, that's my answer. I don't know. One thing I was a big fan of was on sports scene, Michael Stewart, who, I mean, for various other reasons, enjoys getting slagged into Dougie Ross on Twitter, like finding an excuse to do it about football, which I find that quite funny on sports scene.
I think that, have you seen the picture that I sent into the group chat?
Yeah,
I think that's clear that it's over the line.
I'm not going to lie to you, I don't know if I wasn't looking at it properly, but I couldn't see the ball. Right, I'll have a look at it again.
Right, when you zoom in and zoom right in at where Samson is, you see the ball, you see the yellow there, and I think that's evident that it's over the line.
You've just shared that picture because Chris Boyd is centre. Like, that's the only reason. You can barely see the ball.
It's a... No, you can barely see it, but you can know from where you can see the ball to where the post is. It's, for me, that's clear. It's evident it's over the line. Look at how far back Samson is. However, what I will say,
I think we'll post this on the Busboy Twitter, won't we, so other people can see this. Uh-huh. So head over to the Busboy Twitter now. But yeah, I think that. Yeah, it probably is. But I
genuinely think that it's, seen that picture, it's 100% over the line, and thus a goal. However, I am not convinced that Dougie Ross, he can't, I can see what they're saying, but he can't make that call. Like, he does not know that that's fully over the line, and that's a debate here. But you can't slate the guy. And this is me defending a Tory here, by the way, for everybody listening. But you can't
just
give
Kilmarnock a go to give them a win, to be fair.
I know.
You must be like, what did I do here?
I know, it's a very my plastic morals are well and truly shown here, I think. but you can't grudge the guy for making a decision and it's actually the correct one. And here's me sticking up for referees as well. A Tory
breaking
referee.
News, Callum Scott stands up for a Tory on the Busboy podcast.
I know.
That's amazing.
But what they're saying is they're ripping into him, and I totally see why, because he does not know that's over the line. However, it's actually the right decision. So
how do you know that's the right decision? It doesn't matter, does it?
It's just, I know exactly, because he calls it right, but no way he can see for that as a goal and stuff. But it's over the line in the offside, which was the one I thought was a bit tighter. Sports Scene for once actually were able to justify something, opposed to just a bloody bird's eye view camera, no, not even bird's eye view, a tele camera angle that you get in FIFA and try to tell you what happened for that. So they actually, the graphic shows that it was offside as well.
Yeah, I find the offside one so bizarre, because Craig Sampson, who was doing media after the match, was absolutely adamant that the referee cost him with the Simeon Jackson one. Oren Kearney came in after the match as well and said he couldn't really comment on the Kelly second goal because he couldn't really see, but he said it would have been a hell of a call to give it, which quite possibly, judging for that photo, it was. And then he said, but what I can say is that Simeon Jackson goal was onside. The boy, Greg Taylor, the left back, is playing along, to quote Oren Kearney, by 1.5-2 yards. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, I'm going to watch this, it's going to be a terrible call. I have no idea what Oren Kearney or Craig Sampson are on about, because for me, Simeon Jackson is offside, simple as that. I really don't get it. And I think, as much as we criticise referees, maybe there's another angle. So I think it was the St Mirren TV stuff they were looking at. They have their own in-club stuff. I don't know if there's another angle there that might magically come out and might look differently. But for me, as much as we criticise refs, I think, and it's not even the ref in this circumstance, for both the decisions, it's the linesman. Mm-hmm. I think Ross for the first one, I think it's Room, the guy's surname, for the second one. I think they've got them both right. So unless I see anything else that to the contrary, I think you've got to give them the benefit of the doubt with that.
Yep.
One thing that wasn't in doubt was Alan Power's goal. What a strike! Great goal. I mean, in a weekend of good goals, we had Kimberi's one. We had the one today with Hamilton, a few other real, you know, top corner screamers. That was right up there.
I was waiting in Gamba to my bed. I just wanted to hear more people praising Kilmarnock. There wasn't me there, but it was an excellent strike for Alan Power, and it's just somebody. I'm sick of this unsung hero stuff, and even Kelly fans are guilty of it. He's no, every single Kelly fan loves Alan Power. You know what I mean? Like, we talk about him week in, week out. He's tremendous, and it's so crazy to think of this was a guy that lined up at Somerset last July, and people are like, who is this? Like, he'll never cut it. Brilliant strike, thoroughly deserving of it. It's his first goal, obviously, he's been due one. The thing that sticks out for Alan Power for me is, regardless, see if there's a 50-50 ball in there, most CDMs or whatever will just bang, knock it forward, put the nut on it and try and get it out wide or into the strikers. Alan Power consistently brings the ball down in his chest, turns a man and spreads it. He does it every single week, and he's a terrific player, and I'm so grateful to have him at our club.
Yeah, there was a really good moment. I think it was in the first half yesterday when there was one, and he's just a really good midfielder in terms of if a move breaks down, he doesn't quite allow the defence to clear it, and he'll just recharge and he'll recycle it and he'll move it again. He's very good at that. And there was one moment in the first half where he took a really good touch. I think the ball was up in the air and you saw him watching it. He took a really good touch and then played it out to the wings. And I've seen a lot of Killie this season. For me, he's been Killie's best player, I would argue. And I think it says a lot when Killie have basically been without Dicker since, I think, pretty much the red card against Hearts, that Tshibola's come in, and I think the Killie midfield looks as good as it's been all season. Another point I wanted to make just quickly, we're kind of a wee bit short on time, so I'll just make it quickly, is that I thought it was a kind of, for me, the biggest thing that stuck out was that Killie, the way they came out in the second half after being behind at the break, they came out, it was almost like a Celtic or Rangers back in the day, coming out behind it against a team like St Mirren. You know, you could tell that there wasn't a feeling of, oh, we just need to kind of, you know, we're away from home here, we just need to do our best and see if we can nick a goal. There was a real feeling, we need to not just get one goal to draw this game, we need to go out here and win this match in the second half. And they came out flying out the traps, and in all honesty, they could have, in that 15 minutes, they could have scored three or four goals. They had the Finlay shot, I think Power had another shot that was low at the keeper, and I was just really impressed. But I've kind of been impressed most weeks by Kilmarnock when I've seen them. I don't think they ever, the thing I can't really get is they've won like four matches in a row and a few matches before then as well, but I still think I'm yet to really see Killie at their absolute best, you know, really absolutely blowing a team away. And I think for the rest of the league, and it seems bizarre to say it about Kilmarnock, but I think for the rest of the league, that's the most worrying thing, is that I would argue Killie maybe haven't quite had the perfect match yet, and they're still winning matches like yesterday, which is a tough match. Say what you want about St Mirren, but it's a tough match. So impressed by Killie. One final point is that the boy Willock, I thought, for St Mirren in the midfield was really impressive.
I thought he strolled at first half, mate. That's exactly. Yeah. I was saying that to who I was at the game with. I said, nah, he's been man of the match so far. I thought he totally strolled it. In regards to just your point about Kilmarnock, I totally agree. We're still no hit our peak yet, which is excellent for us. I mean,
you look at the big players, like, I know he wasn't playing yesterday, but like say Jordan Jones, he hasn't quite been at it this season so far. I think Greg Taylor's a good player, but I don't think he's quite been at his levels the second half of last season. There's a few other players. I just think that there's even more to come for this Killie team.
Definitely.
Interesting. Right, Hearts 2, Aberdeen 1, a final delve into the Premiership. Duman Naismith for Hearts, Mackay Stephen for Aberdeen. Naismith also missed a penalty as well. Three penalties in this match, Gamba. I thought the first one was incredibly soft.
That's just not a penalty. It just isn't.
I can't even believe how the referee was just so desperate to give it. Like, it wasn't even, like, it was just, It's never a penalty in a million years, man. I don't even think Naismith appeals for it. I could be well wrong in that, because I mean, I think Stephen Naismith would appeal for anything, to be fair to him. But it was never a penalty. I don't know. There we go. We're just trying to give referees credit there. Obviously, because they done Kilmarnock a favour, I was giving them credit. But back to what we know, and an absolutely woeful decision.
Yeah,
this isn't about this game, but it is linked to this game. the Livingston Dundee game, the amount of penalties that Dundee were appealing for, I saw those highlights after I saw this game, and there's like a handball, I mean, you can't put enough quotations around the word handball, that hits a guy on the shoulder, and I can't remember who goes down easily.
Rory Deacon when he's out in the left, that is.
Oh, aye, the one with Gallagher.
And he just like brushes him away.
I watched those highlights after these highlights, and after watching that Naismith penalty, I was just like, nah, fuck it, why not? Just appeal for a penalty, you might get it. Who knows?
he kind of, when he gave the first penalty, he then had to give three, didn't he? Because the other two are penalties. The other two are stonewall ones as well, aren't they?
Yeah. It's just, oh my god. Just one.
Hearts just keep marching on though, Gambit.
It's winning without playing particularly well.
Yeah.
That's a sign of something.
The big news, obviously, during the week about the injuries to Suter and Nick Piatt, who didn't seem to affect him too much. Do you think that Well, it's an obvious question. It will affect them. To what extent do you think that will affect them this season?
It will affect them. It'll be very interesting to see how they get on against Celtic, because you never know whether you can read too much into an Aberdeen game when they're playing a big team, because Aberdeen just shit the bed against big teams, and I think they've done it again here. Hearts have their centre back pairing, the first centre back pairing out injured. They've also got one of the best players this season out injured again, and they've lost. And I don't know whether that says a lot about Hearts or whether that says a lot about Aberdeen. Probably about Aberdeen.
I think that, of course, as Hamie said, it's definitely going to affect them. I don't think going forward in the attacking sense at all, because you've surely just got to give Naze the play him up top, and he will score more goals than Ikpeazu anyway. So yeah, play Naismith up there. But I think defensively, Suter's always been one I've never ever been really that sure about, and I always thought he was maybe a bit overrated, purely just because he was a young Scottish boy. But I think he has impressed this season, and it's obviously really disappointing to see him with that injury, to rule him out for however many months it is. I can't remember, but
between 5 and 6,
it's crazy. But I think that I think they'll maybe struggle defensively. I mean, the recruitment has been good though, Hearts, and that's the polar opposite of what I was saying at the start of the season. But I think a lot of their business towards the end of the window, obviously we're getting the guy like Jimmy Dunn and stuff, I think, who's a cracking player, and Dimitri Mitchell and stuff back. But it definitely will take its toll at some point. But I think up front, I think they'll actually be alright, because I think Naismith will do the business, and they've got like Craig Whiting and stuff as well in the bench, who I think has got a lot to offer if and when given the chance. But nah, terrible. But one thing is, Stephen Naismith is absolutely shocking at penalties, man.
Yeah,
that's two he's already
missed in the season. Hearts could go 6 points clear on Tuesday night when they travel to bottom club Dundee. So fair chance that Hearts, and there'd then be, I think, a 10-day gap for most teams, because I think Killy are the only team near the top that are in action next Saturday.
Hamilton at home,
6 points clear. In other news, if Hearts were to lose on Tuesday, Killy could go top of the league against Hamilton on Saturday. So there's a few, couple of interesting subplots, I'm sure, over the next week or so. Just briefly on Aberdeen, really struggling to get going, Gambit. Just seems like they're paying the price for maybe slightly their, and it seems bizarre to blame this, but maybe slightly their fixture card, and the fact that they come up against every second week, they seem to have a tough match. And we know how Aberdeen deal with the big matches and the tough matches not very well. Is it just a case this season that Hearts have improved, Hibs have improved, Rangers have improved, Killy have improved, Livingston are in the league, and Aberdeen have stayed still?
Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it.
In fact, maybe staying still has been kind on them. Maybe they've regressed.
Yeah, I mean, the one you're looking at now, and I know everyone was kind of at the time going, well, you know, Adam Rooney was a fair age and he didn't do particularly well last season.
And he's banging them in for Salford, by the way.
It's worrying, because you're looking at a game like this and you're going, like, you would maybe throw him on just to get a goal in the last couple of minutes, and now you don't have that option. Who was it that missed the
Wilson?
It's criminal. Oh my God. And that's on his strong foot as well, though. Like, I mean, you give him the benefit of the doubt. If it's you know what I mean, if you have to take the shot and you're left and you're right footed and you squaff it or whatever, but that's on Wilson's stronger foot there. He's got to bury that for there. And just looking again at the lineups, and I think, obviously, Joe Lewis, terrific goalkeeper, and I'd still say he's definitely up there with the best in the league. Your back four's okay. It's no great, but it's okay. Midfield's decent, but up front, it's just what Gamba's saying there. I mean, Adam Rooney, for me, walks into that team over Cosgrove and Wilson. I know Wilson's got the pedigree about Man United and stuff, but Adam Rooney will get you goals if he plays, and he's better. I reckon he would have finished that chance that Wilson got anyway. Stevie May, has never got goals in him, which is bizarre considering the guy that came through at St Johnstone. He just doesn't appear to be that kind of striker. Niall McGinn is a terrific player on his day and has still definitely got something to offer, but he's not the player he once was. I'm with Hamish, I think they've stood still a wee bit. You don't really fear Aberdeen as much as they did. I mean, Cosgrove, the boy Bruce Anderson, who looks promising, but I mean, they've not got to fear these guys. The guy Gleeson they signed in the summer, he's not really kicked a ball. I've not seen a lot of Aberdeen, but he's not kicked a ball. Who I do like, though, is young, is it Scott Wright? The winger. I've always liked to look at him, and I would like to see him given a chance. But then again, who does he come in for? I mean, Gary Mackay-Stephen has actually found consistency for the first time in his career. I think that's the big bright spot.
He's probably been a bright spot this season, hasn't he?
He has been. He's terrific, and it's week in, week out. I think that he's always there or thereabouts, whereas before you questioned whether he really had that in him. But he's definitely their main man, and he's a terrific talent when he's on his game.
Yeah. So disappointment for Aberdeen there. We'll move into the Ladbrokes Championship, where the top two were battling it out on Saturday. Ross County beat Ayr United 2-1. Watched the highlights of this match. County seemed to be dominant in the first half. They went in 2-0 up through goals from Mullen and Mackay. I think that was Mackay's fifth in his last three matches, including a hat-trick at Tannadice a few weeks ago. So he's banging in the goals at the moment. Ayr fought back in the second half. No surprises who scored their goal. And they also had a few chances late on. One real opportunity, I didn't quite catch who it was, but it was a shot that kind of came out, and the boy, I think it was probably a midfielder, basically had to hit it low into the corner, and he hit it. It was one of those where he hit it straight down the keeper and high, so the keeper just kind of tipped it away. But a real chance for them. The second goal for County from Josh Mullen is an absolute cracker. If you get to see that one, it seemed to be a weekend for top corner goals. It's quite similar to the Hamilton one in many ways. He kind of cuts inside and thumps it into the top corner. And I suppose it's a big win for Ross County, that one, Gamba.
Yes, my prediction of Ayr winning that division not looking great now.
It's not far away, though.
No, I mean, again, it's still quite tight. And if Inverness Caledonian Thistle ever decide to win a game of football again, then you could have a kind of
four draws in a row. I've got that note down. Oh
my
on.
God! But if Inverness ever decide to win a game, or I mean, Dundee United are okay. I know they've played a few games, but they're kind of a similar distance away as Inverness are. It could be a three horse race. But if Ayr are just stick with it, just you know, keep doing what they were doing earlier on in the season and even before this game. I mean, again, it's the cliches, going up to Dingwall, difficult place to go, not everyone's expecting you to win there, and I know Ross County were a lot of people's favourites to win the league this season, but they just need to keep at it and they'll be there or thereabouts at the end of the year. I don't think this is a massive setback for them. It would have been huge if they could have come away with a point or even three, but losing at Ross County is not a massive setback for you.
Yeah, and they very nearly did come away with a draw, as I say. Yeah. Chances in the second half seemed to belong to them. I think Ross County look like a pretty good team, though. I think they've got a few good players, and they almost, it kind of strikes you when you see a team like Dundee United, who's come down and made such an arse of it trying to get up so far, and you see Ross County, the way they've just come down, and they just suddenly look like the best team in the league. It's kind of how it should be done. I think they look really good. So a 2-1 win for them. They go back top, I think 2 points ahead of United, but still a long way to go there. The big match, World War 3, took place in the Championship on Saturday. It was certainly built as World War 3. I don't know if it really lived up to the hype. Certainly looking at the highlights, it looked like a bit of a damp squib in terms of the atmosphere. For some reason, I've got Morton 2, Falkirk 1 written down here. I'm sure it was 1-0 to Morton.
Yes.
Big moment, Leo Fasan, red card for Falkirk. I saw Ray McKinnon's comments after the match, and he seemed to suggest that for whatever reason, this wasn't a red card. I struggle to see the logic behind that, because for me, it looked like an absolute certain red card and a foul, although I did just see the one angle on Falkirk TV. Another thing Ray McKinnon was unhappy about was the ball moving for the free kick. I think he said simply that you're not allowed to. No, what was it? He said that the ball needs to be stationary for a dead ball, which I thought that's a kind of fair point. Yes. That's in the rules of football, isn't it? And that led to the Morton goal. I thought it was ironic that as Ray McKinnon made his return to Greenock, it was a former Falkirk hero who scored the winner, of course, in Bob McHugh. So that sums up quite a lot. It's a good win for Morton, their first under Jonathan Johansson. and that'll be a welcome victory, Callum.
No, 100%. It was really kind of all eyes on this on Saturday, thinking what was going to happen with Judas Ray McKinnon returning to Capello. But
the red cards.
It was just. I thought just with the kind of the build up and stuff, I really thought that Falkirk actually would have went down there, and I just thought McKinnon would have had them right up for it. But you were saying, Hamish, you've seen the highlights, and it was very, it looked like a kind of drab affair or whatever.
I mean, don't get me wrong, they had a few chances. The boy Rudden up top had a really good chance in the first half, a header where time stopped and he seemed to just not know what he was doing, and he headed it wide, and they had a few chances later on, but Morton probably just shaded it.
Yeah, well, I think obviously Ray McKinnon actually says in his post-match as well that they had two good chances earlier on and obviously failed to take them, and you're away from home, you really have to take your chances and then sit in, and it's up to the home team to kind of break you down. But it's a shame that there wasn't more than one red card and McKinnon or whatever wasn't sent to the stand. So I was kind of disappointed when I just seen it was 1-0 Morton, but it's a massive result for Morton, who I think it's just, I feel for them so much because I think that they're just that total middle ground in that division. I mean, there's no a lot between any of the teams. You've got one extreme, you've got Ross County, who have got the most resources in the league, then followed closely by Dundee United, and then you've got Arlo at the other end of the spectrum, who have got the least resources, and then other than that, it's just it's a no man's land kind of thing, you know what I mean? I mean, there's not a lot between the teams, but I can't see Morton getting into the playoffs or whatever this season. I just think the league's too strong, and I think, similar to your kind of viewers in St Johnstone, I think that they're too good to get down, but I can't see them really getting into the playoffs or whatever.
I would agree with that totally. Dundee United 1, Inverness 1, Robbie Nielsen's home debut for Dundee United. Both sides on 15 points, although Inverness have played a game fewer. And as we said earlier, Cali Thistle 4 draws in a row. I think 2 of those 0-0, 2 of them 1-1. So there we go, they're up against, I think I'm right in saying, Alloa next. So maybe a good bet and a draw there at that one next week. Talking of Alloa, they got their first win against Gary Caldwell's Partick Thistle on Gary Caldwell's debut as Partick Thistle manager. 7 defeats in 10 championship matches so far this season for Thistle. Fair enough, 6 of them were under Alan Archibald, so there's not much Caldwell can do under that, but that's disappointing. What did you make of the Gary Caldwell appointment, Callum?
I thought it was actually could potentially be a right shrewd bit of business from Thistle. I think, so, I mean, Gary Caldwell won the league with Wigan as well, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
I mean,
he's sacked, I think, 2 months later.
The beauty of English football right there. But, I mean, for a guy who's only got, maybe 3 years managerial experience, I mean, he's learned a lot in that time. And I think that they made the point, was it Chester? It was at Chesterfield he went to after that. And even though that didn't go to plan, that would have been a brilliant learning curve for him as well, because I mean, he's seen the highs, he obviously leading Wigan up back into the championship, to then struggling. So he's actually already achieved quite a lot, and obviously his CV speaks for itself in regards to his playing career. I mean, he's played at the highest level, he's won trophies in England and Scotland, in
FA Cup winning captain.
I know. I do think that could be quite shrewd, and I know it's bizarre because they just get beat 1-0, and I think he actually spoke about it himself, but I think that they'll be a right good defensive unit. I think that they'll be really, really hard to beat for then on in, and when you've got guys like, I think obviously Koulibaly and stuff, to kind of get goals out of nothing, I think they could be a right good force, and given time, I think it's a very, very good appointment. But credit to Alwa and Jim Goodwin again, who's, you know, obviously working with that kind of shoestring budget, and they're still competing.
From what I heard from this game, Thistle like dominated it apparently. So hopefully, hopefully from a Thistle point of view, a sign of, a good sign. But I mean, if they're just going to keep missing chances, they'll be fucked. So
good to stats. They had 21 shots. So I mean, that's pretty remarkable. Albeit only 4 in target. So I mean, that's something that probably needs addressed.
Last game, Dunfermline 0, Queen of the South 1. Josh Todd scoring 10 minutes from time there for Queen of the South. No Dobie goal this week, but a welcome 3 points for Queen of the South. That was the Championship. Interesting to note, Dundee United Inverness 1. Dundee United 1, Inverness 1. What was what made that game unique this week in Scottish football? Or in the SPFL?
Inverness still the only undefeated team in the top 4?
I don't know. I was going to say the Invincibles, but no.
Oh, no, Chris, they're still
the only
one
draw
teams
in the SPFL.
Oh my god,
is that right?
Yeah, obviously there was no League 2, but if you look at League 1, we'll run through League 1 now. Arbroath 3, Dumbarton 1. Arbroath top of the league. A wee story for you. I was watching the highlights for this one because they're up in the I think it's the Dumbarton YouTube, and the most bewildering thing happened. If you watch the highlights for the first half, Dumbarton are score a goal into their own fans, who are packed obviously in the away end at Gayfield. And I was watching the highlights of the second half, and Dumbarton are shooting into their own fans again.
Probably the old traditional thing when they used to swap at half time. They probably still done
that. That's what happened. I thought that was a really interesting, if it is a tradition, but I just thought that was, how does that even come about? Do they just switch around at half time, just walk up to the other end?
Well, obviously, years and years ago, they used to do it, obviously, particularly in the lower divisions. Well, it would have been the lower divisions because this is my stories that my dad told me when Kilmarnock were in the third tier of Scottish football and stuff. Absolutely, again, playing all these teams. But a lot of Kelly fans will actually tell you that's one of the most enjoyable times because we've just got all these grounds and that. But I know that's what they used to do. I mean, you would always shoot into your own fans, and at half time they would literally walk on the park. They would cross. They'd be walking in the pitch to cross over. It's crazy. It's
fantastic.
Just all these it's brilliant, especially back then, the 70s and stuff, man. Just, could you imagine the kind of shift of characters that were making their way across the centre circle? Yeah. And I think there was always again, just going by what my dad was saying, there was always a lot of bother with Hearts, and I think that's where Hearts' kind of reputation came from as well. They were always fighting at half time and stuff, and the fans were crossing over. So it's great to see that it's still happening at Gayfield.
I doubt there was mass brawls between Arbroath and Dumbarton fans. I can't really see the rivalry.
If anything, it would be Dick Campbell that would be fighting it anyway. He'd come out the tunnel for that.
Yeah, but he would have certainly been very happy. 3-1 for them against Dumbarton. Arbroath obviously putting the Edinburgh City freak result to the back of their minds in the cup last week. A good story here, Stephen Dorris, 406 days out with a cruciate ligament injury, came back after, that's over a year obviously, a year and a month, and scored a goal, I think 2 or 3 minutes into his return on Saturday. So fantastic for him. Of course, some managerial news for Dumbarton as well today. We'll come on to that in a wee bit, a couple of minutes. Other results in League One. East Fife made it 8 wins on the spin, 6 in the league. They beat Brechin, and somehow, despite that, 6 wins in a row in the league, they're still 5 points adrift of Arbroath, which probably just shows how good Dick Campbell's side have been so far this season. Raith Rovers beat Stranraer 2-1 despite playing the whole second half with 10 men, so a good victory for John McGlynn and Raith Rovers there. Forfar beat Stenhouse Muir 2-1 at Ockleview. Airdrieonians beat bottom club Montrose 3-0 to end a winless run of 5 matches. Airdrie are 11 adrift of Dumbarton, but they'll be hoping they've not left it too late to appoint a new manager, which brings me on to the wee topic. Of course, Jim Duffy announced to Dumbarton earlier today, Ian Murray to Airdrieonians, I think on Friday evening. Two really good appointments for League One there, isn't it, as well? And I suppose, in my opinion, it just shows how many good managers we've got Scottish football at the moment. I think you could argue Jim Duffy, certainly, and Ian Murray to a lesser extent could possibly a couple of years ago have been looking at championship jobs. And I think the fact they've gone to two kind of struggling League One sides, you know, I think they're like fifth and eighth in the table at the moment, probably shows how many good managers we've got in the country at the moment, Gamba.
Yes, I mean, obviously, if you were listening to sane people were not saying this, but there were people who were trying to get Jim Duffy the Scotland job not that long ago.
Wasn't Chick Young, was it?
Yes, it was.
The same Chick Young that put forward, I think it was Lauren Shankland and Stephen Dobby for Scotland.
Mm. You'd give Dobby a call up, wouldn't you?
Let's not do this.
You've got to reward that freak, man. But anyway, right, in regards to Duffy, just Jim Duffy and stuff, as Gamba said, he was even linked to with Premiership jobs and that. See, when McCulloch left us last year, there was people saying that Duffy wouldn't be a bad appointment for Kilmarnock either. And I think it was maybe Dundee. He was kind of linked with the Dundee job recently, yeah, as well. But just obviously links to Thistle as well. It's a brilliant appointment. Ian Murray, I think that just shows you, see what I think it shows you. Obviously, it's excellent, but it just shows how much these guys have to get back into the game as well.
Because he's been out in Norway. I think he's been assistant at a team called Asker.
Yep.
So I think he was delighted to get back into Scottish football.
And again, it'll be interesting to see how he does. Obviously, with the kind of, he's went away again. He's learned. The St Mirren was a disaster, but he's learned. And obviously the kind of job that he'd done with Dumbarton and stuff, I think he should do all right at Airdrie.
Yeah. I've got a lot of time for Ian Murray. I think he had a complete disaster at St Mirren, but he wasn't the only one in that time frame.
It just looked to die.
Yeah, Jack Ross was the one that bucked the trend there, wasn't he? Because you look at the other likes of, names are escaping me now. I suppose the likes of Gary Teal and
Alex Ray and stuff was.
Yeah, Alex, he's one I completely forgot was even at St Mirren.
But he deserves to be slated, I think, Alex Ray, just for the kind of type of guy that he is. But but you're right. And but the beauty of the Jack Ross success was just look what happens when you give somebody time. And I know it's different because when you're a fan, and I've been there myself, I mean, if somebody tried to tell me, and I can't get through any Busboy episode without having to reference Gary Locke, as everybody knows, but if somebody tried to tell me to give Gary Locke more time at Kelly, I would have, you know what I mean, like stuff like that, and you know that it's never got to work. But I mean, Jack Ross, it took him a while to get it, and then it did, and just the run that went on to promotion, it's brilliant. But it just shows you the rewards of what time can give you. And I think Ian Murray going into Airdrie seems like a good fit. Airdrie are a club who really should be doing a lot better than what they are. Obviously, big club in regards to
particularly that level.
Aye, but there's rumours of them maybe getting back. The full time had not really worked, but I think he will do well there. As I say, just to kind of because of what he done at Dumbarton with the part time stuff, I think he should do there, and that seems like a right good fit. And I think Jim Duffy's a very shrewd appointment again, similar to Gary Caldwell is, but it'll be Dumbarton.
Yeah, two really good appointments, I think, for League One. I think the stature of League One has grown pretty much overnight with those two appointments. Dumbarton will face Airdrie Lanes in the next round of the Scottish Cup, funnily enough, as well, so we'll see how those two get on there. On the subject of the Scottish Cup, a few notable results. Albion Rovers now, Fort Martin United 2, just an absolute nightmare at Albion Rovers. It's seen the end of John Brogan. He is away, which brings the managerial casualty number to 14, if my counting is correct. That's a third of the 42 teams have now lost the manager that they started the season with, which I just think is mad, considering we're not even at the end of October yet.
English football numbers. It's mental.
Maybe that's the way we're going. Maybe English football is where we're going. Beath 4, Linlithgow Rose 0. Beath will play Ayr United.
Brilliant.
In the next round, which is a great draw. I think we'll come on to the draw in a wee second, but that's a great one. Devon Vale 1, Stirling University 2. Great result for Stirling Uni there, and one up for the Lowland League over the Highland League. Stirling Albion will play Elgin City. I think that's at home as well, if I'm right in saying so. Yes, University of Stirling at home, Elgin City. That's a great draw for them as well in the next round. And Peterhead 3, Kelty Hearts 2. Barry Ferguson's Kilty Hearts, although he wasn't in charge, I don't believe, for this game in Peterhead. What did you make of the Ferguson appointment, Cal?
I mean, listen, there's a lot I can say. There's a lot I can say about Barry Ferguson. I think it's very ambitious for Kilty Hearts, but again, just I don't know what kind of beckons for Barry Ferguson. Obviously, as a player, he looked kind of tailor made to be. Oh, he's a guy who's got to do really well in management. Really struggled at Clyde. And I don't know, it's just I really think the best thing for Ferguson in regards to if he wants to actually progress as a coach in the game and become a man in his own right, I think the best thing for him was to try and get a number two gig somewhere. I think he would have done well there. But hey, fair play to them. Obviously Kilty Hearts, again, it's a very ambitious appointment. But I don't really know. I mean, they're managing in the Lowland League, a guy like Barry Ferguson. I just think that, I mean, he could have got into most coaching staff jobs in Scotland, I think, to be fair. Like, if he was just willing to go and kind of apply his trade under somebody else and learn for people. But it should be interesting, because he's actually a guy that I would like to see, like, just purely for kind of entertainment purposes and stuff, and just exactly. The name of Barry Ferguson, aye.
If he was in the Premiership, it'd be another big name. It'd be another name. It wouldn't be obviously quite as big as Steven Gerrard, but it would be a big appointment. It'd be a Neil Lennon, wouldn't it, in terms of kind of high profile. If Barry Ferguson was in charge of, say, just for kind of comparison to Neil Lennon, say he was in charge of Hearts, it'd be box office, that kind of name. So yeah, great appointment for Lowland League. I think my only worry would be that at Clyde, his big problem, I think Barry Ferguson was expecting too much of his players and not having the quality to implement the system he wanted to play. And I think playing his career at such a high level has had its negatives in terms of going to a team like Clyde, and he's going an even further step down the ladder into the Lowland League, although they are, I think, joint top of the Lowland League at the moment, and as you say, a very ambitious club that are looking. They've just come up from the East of Scotland League, or the South, whatever one it is, and they're certainly looking at getting up to the SPFL in a couple of years, if not this season. It'll be the East of Scotland League, because I think, if I'm right in saying so, Kilty Hearts are from Fife, they're kind of Cowdenbeath area. So Stirling Albion and Clyde, they're both out of the Scottish Cup, but it was against fellow League 2 teams, the William Hill Scottish Cup third round. Just looking at a few ties, a couple of interesting ones. We touched on Beath against Ayr. I'm sure we'll come on to that late, nearer the time of the match, because that for me is just a cracking cup tie. Ayrshire. You'll get a massive Ayr support going there. It'll just be a really good day, that. Other ones, one that's Edinburgh City against Inverness Cali Thistle was a cracker. The way Edinburgh City have started the league, best team in League 2, and going up against a team like Inverness with home advantage, I think will be brilliant. Few other ones, I'm just trying to look. Stenhouse Muir Falkirk's a bit of a local derby. Aye. That'll be a good one. As I said, University of Stirling against Elgin City. So there's plenty to get excited about there in the William Hill Scottish Cup.
Who is it, Cove or Talbot will play in the next round?
They're away to Fraserburgh.
Ah, that's a shame for Talbot, because not to throw conspiracies in here, but if that's the tie they've got, I don't think they'll be that bothered about winning. Because I mean, to go all the way up to Cove, that's what I'm saying, because on the way back down, and that's some result up there, because I thought Cove would win just purely because of the distance and stuff. It's obviously got to have an effect. And I'm like, Talbot bring them back down, Talbot will beat them in Beechwood. But for them, the next round to be away to Fraserburgh, it's not really much appealing, to be fair, for kind of club expenses and stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah. Right, I think that that pretty much wraps things up. It's been another absolutely packed podcast, hasn't it? Are they all like this?
Just about.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's just the manic world of Scottish football at the moment. I'm just wondering if we had any questions, and I did ask for them. I don't know if we've got much time to talk about them anyway, but it was just another massively jam-packed weekend of Scottish football, and I think the week as well, with some of the news we had, obviously a lot of managers coming in and a lot of other stuff. What will our formation be this week? That one's in from the famous Lard O'Connor. I'm thinking 0-1-2. So he's probably just about nailed that, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Who'd be the one sitting?
Me. I'd say
any
me.
Reasoning behind that?
I wouldn't
that?
Debate that.
I like sitting.
Right, well, I think that's a pretty sad end to the podcast. I'm not going to lie, guys, but I'll thank you, Callum Scott and Andrew Gamba, for joining me. It's been good back into the, or it's been good being back in the hot seat, chatting about all the issues of Scottish football. Hopefully, I'll return. Burst Ball will certainly return at some point. Just very quickly, in case we don't have time to do a Betfred Cup semi-final prediction, just give me the two teams you think will be in the final this time next week, Gamba.
Celtic Rangers.
Oh! Killer Cal?
Celtic and Rangers. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong. But I just think that the two babies will not do well enough. As we spoke about, Aberdeen have kind of stood still a bit, and just with their kind of ticket sales and stuff, I mean, you're really giving Rangers an advantage. And I think that Celtic, even though Hearts beat Celtic a lot in this season, I think that Celtic are still head and shoulders above Hearts.
Should be interesting anyway. We'll keep an eye out on that. Take care in the meantime. We'll speak to you very soon.